Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Perfect Imbalance. On this show, we bring together conversation and expertise. My name is Jeff Way, and I'm the founder of Perfect Imbalance, the first podcast to challenge the myth of work-life balance and explore alternatives for improving overall well-being. Each week, I'll be interviewing different thought leaders, elite sports performers and entrepreneurs to understand how they are achieving happiness, success and greater fulfillment in their lives. So here's to you, the listeners, joining us each week. Welcome to Perfect Imbalance. On this episode, I'm delighted to share my interview with Bronwyn Thornton, the Chief Executive Officer of Walk 21, an international charity dedicated to ensuring the right to walk. We get right into the discussion and talk around having that belief in something that you're doing, finding that real passion from within, as well as exploring what Bronwyn describes as working from one list when it comes to her own perfect imbalance. We also discuss the amazing journey so far of Walk 21, celebrating its 20th anniversary this year, with its annual conference being held in Rotterdam. So many gems of inspiration during our conversation. Here's Bronwyn. Bronwyn, thank you very much indeed for agreeing to come on the show. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to spend some time with you today. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm very honoured to have been invited. Thank you.
Well, that's very kind of you to say so. And as with each of my guests at the very outset, I'm really interested in getting their thoughts on work-life balance. So Bronwyn, what's your thoughts on work-life balance?
Okay, it's a question I have been mulling in thinking about this, joining you today, because the thing that my husband and I, and my husband Jim, is critical in achieving the version of work-life balance that we have, and the way we summarize it is that we work from one list. So we don't have a work list and a life list. We don't have this sort of separation of the realms of our life. And we don't see that work is this negative space that we have to get through and life is then the positive that we then come home and enjoy. Because we work together and we work from home and we are raising still the 4 boys and we have a pretty hectic international travel schedule. So balance sounds like a long way in all that. But what it means is that we just know that everything has to be done and we juggle it together. And the way I think about it is it's because we're passionate about what we do. So work doesn't feel like we work hard, but it's something that we're highly motivated to do. And I always think about it as the critical factor for me is that you have to have a little bit of balance every day. So we walk the dog every morning and enjoy a bit of green countryside. And yeah, it's also the long game because you have days when you have to, when the balance is completely out. You have to work late, you have to work long hours, you are totally absorbed in work, or you have to take time out and you have to have family time or this. And so sometimes you might work really hard for a couple of weeks and then you rebalance at the end of that. But you have to have that sense, as we do, as I said, come back to where we started, which was, it's one list and we work it together to make it all happen.
I love that. And I love what you've gone on to describe there in terms of, you know, giving us a little bit of insight into your circumstances and also where some of your challenges may lie, but also what you're passionate about, which we're going to come on to shortly and explore. Bronwyn, I love the idea of one list. At what point did you and Jim come about or settle on that one list or realise that was going to be what would work for you?
That came when Jim and I met. He already had three sons. So when I was pregnant with our son, I was working with someone else, for someone else. And we realized that it would be too challenging in the juggle of life to for me to be trying to go off to the office every day to someone else. And since we share our professional arena, we decided, it really was at that moment that we decided to have the one list. And it was one of those fundamental changes, because up until that point, you know, we'd been running in different directions and different circles and different professional demands. And this just meant that we could bring it all together and consolidate it. So it was having a child and having maternity leave, and then realizing that this is how we could make all the demands of life work best.
I love it. And I'm smiling to myself as you share that, because actually when my third child, my wife's first child, came along, it was at that point that we changed and we moved to one calendar, not quite taking it as far as a list, although there are lots of lists that appear throughout the house at different times. But we have this shared calendar, which, you know, when I describe it to other people, they laugh and they smile, but it works for us because we both have different jobs. We both work in different places. In order to be able to, you know, coordinate things and function and make sure the younger one is picked up as well as the older two each week, it's essential to us, and it has become a way of working.
I think that's a great way. It's one list or one calendar is the same sort of principle. And I must admit that the technology has genuinely helped in that regard of having one calendar. And it really does make the difference, because you can see and understand and make sure that juggle. So it's a very similar thing. And when you are juggling multiple families and dimensions and activities, having that shared coordination point has really helped us. We've had dogs and things in that mix as well, as travel and, you know, demands each end. And we've been able to, it's never always easy, but at least you've got the basics there to make it easy most of the time.
Yeah, I would echo that. It's never always easy. When it is, you do tend to enjoy that and make the most of it before you go again.
Exactly. Yeah.
Bronwyn, I'm sure the listeners are intrigued to understand and know a little bit more about you. So can you describe what it is you do and why people want to work or interact with you?
Okay. We laugh a lot about when people ask us what it is that we do, because the short answer is that we promote walking. And the long answer is then a bit of a piece of string, to be fair. It's quite long. But the essence of it is that we do promote walking, and we focus on that. I run an international NGO that represents walking within transport arenas and health arenas all over the world. So mostly utilitarian walking, like walking to school or walking to the shops. And designing our cities so that people can choose to walk, as well as running programs and creative ideas to encourage people to walk. And so we host an international conference every year. As like, I always explain it to people, it's like our flagship event, like a flagship store. And we also do projects with global agencies and with cities around the world, to support them to make their cities more walkable, or to support people in their walking. So it's all about walking, and in many different dimensions, whether it's for climate, health, transport, community, schools, workplaces, it's endlessly interesting. To the other half of your question about why people want to work and interact with me and with this agenda, I think part of it, and the reason that I'm still here, is because I just fundamentally believe in it. And people pick up on that passion, I think, and that the positivity. I am a reliable optimist, and I just believe in that the world can be a better place for this. And I think that when people find someone who is talking about things that they've been thinking about, this is my experience anyway over the past 15 years, is that people go, oh, finally someone who's saying the things that I've been thinking or wanting to think about. And so people pick up on that and work with us on this agenda.
At what point did you discover and decide to focus your work on ensuring, you know, the right to walk and the opportunity to enjoy it? I mean, it sounds fantastic what you're doing, and clearly you are very passionate about it as well and believe in it. But let's go back a little bit. At what point did you get involved and decide this was what you're going to do?
It sounds a bit cheesy, but I can only tell it as it was. I literally had an epiphany. And, you know, I always laugh about the road to Damascus because, of course, we're walking on the road to Damascus. But I was working in Australia, and I was working in the transport arena. I have a degree in sociology, and I'd studied architecture, and I had this sort of collection of experiences and qualifications and things. And a friend of mine, and she remains my friend and colleague, heard about the Walk 21 conference that was coming to Perth in 2001. And I was like, what? A conference about walking? It was absolutely, completely so far from my mind. And then when we talked about it, I realized I really wanted to go. So we went together, and I literally sat in that conference, and there was only a couple of 100 people, and it was 2 days in this conference space. And some of the global leaders in my field were there at the time because it was all just starting to happen. And I just sat there and felt like finally I had found my path, that all this sort of disparate experience, this sort of what seemed like a real mess of a career, just, it's like all the different rays had focused in on a single point and lit a new fire for me. And I always admired people who had a singular passion, like a ballerina or a musician or a painter or a doctor. And I never had that. I was always exploring and things, but everything came together in this moment. And I mean, it was this ridiculous. I literally sat there going, wow, this is why it makes sense, because it's more than transport. It's about who we are as people, and it's about the spaces and places that we build within which to be to live our everyday lives. And I absolutely, at that moment, I had that realization that this is where I wanted to go, that this is where all this mess was going to take me. And I had two decisions that I made at that point in time. One was that it was all about walking and I had to start working in walking. And the second one was that I had to move to the UK to make that happen. And so that was in late 2001, and in February 2003, I got on an aeroplane and flew out of Brisbane, and I've been here ever since.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry. I know. I mean, I do feel a bit ridiculous, but it is that cheesy.
I love the fact that you've had an epiphany, because actually, I know other people that have had an epiphany, and when you hear them and feel them talk about the calling that they've had and what they've decided to do, you absolutely realize that they have given 100% and gone with it and made some very different decisions as a result of it. What was your thinking around coming to the UK, and how important did you see that in terms of what's happened?
So I'd wanted to work internationally anyway. So I did have a want to travel and work. And I had got a little bit stuck in Brisbane, and both professionally and personally, I'd got a bit stuck. And I had always wanted to work overseas. And in my personal life, we had a bit of a plan to do it, but it wasn't happening. it was taking too long. And when I looked around to see where I could do something about walking, I couldn't, I wanted to get some experience under my belt because nobody was doing anything in Australia about it. And I felt unqualified to be, to start. So I looked around to see where I could come and learn from other people and be involved where walking was already being considered and being accommodated and people were working on projects and ideas about it. And so I mean, the language thing was a factor, so but also because the UK was leading this arena at the time. They had an organisation called Living Streets, which is the pedestrians organisation here that promotes walking. It was much smaller back then when I... It really was just expanding and the whole agenda was taking off over here. And I'd met a couple of people at the conference to bring me, you know, to give me sort of a foot into the conversation. So it really came, I was lucky that it was in the country where I can speak the language, but also where this was, where the idea was taking off. I didn't know then that I would still be here. I just came and to get work and to learn about walking and walkability and see where it took me.
I'm intrigued and I'm curious and obviously that's why I've invited you onto the show, because I when I started to read and discover and delve a little bit more, I was absolutely fascinated, because walking to me in a very kind of narrow-minded way is something that we can do every day, yet lots and lots of people don't for varying reasons, and it's probably something I've taken for granted for a long time in my life without really realizing the importance of what walking gives me or does for me. What specifically was it about walking that captured your heart and mind and then ultimately has, you know, resulted in you being involved with Walk 21 ever since and doing some great work along the way?
I think the thing about walking is it is for all of us. You're right. The challenge it has, its greatest strength is also its greatest weakness. So its greatest strength is that it's intensely inclusive and it's all of us. And so when people said, you know, why should we do walking? What reason? I said, well, there's 7.3 billion reasons, and that's the number of people on the planet. And that's how niche we are about what we do. And so it's for everyone. I have a strong sense of social justice, social equity, and the importance of doing something that makes for good in the world. So I see that it allows for that. It sits in that side of the agenda. And its greatest weakness is that everybody does it and nobody thinks about it. It doesn't have a thing like a bicycle, which everyone can sort of identify with and create lobbies and, you know, things for. So it is the challenge with walking, but that's what makes it difficult but also fantastic, because when people say, aren't you sick of, you know, doing walking or being involved with walking, I said, there's so many things to think about, you know, whether it's about poverty alleviation and access to work, whether it's about underpinning our public transport systems, whether it's about health and people getting, or children's independence in walking to school, or air quality, or, you know, just whether old people have access to their social life and can cross the road with enough time. It's very easy when we're young, able-bodied people not to notice those important but often small things that can socially exclude people. And so it just continually has interesting things to be thought about, and it's ultimate, from my perspective, it's ultimately about enabling people to be part of their communities, to access, you know, other people and shops and schools, and to do that in a clean and healthy way.
You've got me intrigued more and more, and I'm curious to understand a little bit more about the events that you do within Walk 21. You alluded to it earlier on in terms of your conference. What do you see as the purpose of those events, and actually what goes on at those events? Because they sound intriguing.
So Walk 21, I mean, we started as a conference. It was the brainchild of my husband, Jim, and he and his friend Rodney, and we all still work together on this. And it started in London. The first one was in the year 2000, so we're celebrating 20 years this year. And the conference is a classic conference. We have, you know, keynote speakers, and we have sessions where people can talk about their projects. And we have what we famously call our walk shops. So people actually go out and walk around the city. We don't just talk about walking, but we do some, and we learn from the city which is hosting the conference. And we make sure that we bring together both the political people, the professional people, and the community advocates who are passionate about this subject. And it's really important to us to not just talk about walking for those 3 days and create networks. And I mean, literally people say to me, and I only say this because it's what warms my heart, but they say, you know, this conference changed my life. And I said, well, it changed mine. So I'm really glad it's changing somebody else's. But people just, you know, very for the last 10 to 12 years, the people who wanted to work on making the world a better place to walk were tucked in corners. You know, they're tucked away. They're not in the big money departments of cars and roads and public transport. And they're sitting there battling on, feeling very lonely most of the time. And we bring them together for 3 days, and they can't believe that there's such a lovely community of people out there, or that there's enough to talk about for 3 days. But actually there's plenty. And we have such a great time. We celebrate their efforts. We celebrate the agenda. We highlight new issues and, you know, try to progress it. And we have a very strong commitment to leaving a legacy in the city where we go, so that there's a tangible legacy that the city can take forward after the conference as well. And we, and also it gives us, it keeps us in touch with what's happening, because when we go into international, you know, global forums, and, you know, we're working with World Health or on different international agendas, it keeps us grounded and in touch with what communities are doing all over the world. And we can bring that up into those discussions. We're throwing a party. It's a professional party to remember that it's all worthwhile, and to inspire people to keep on doing all the good things that they do.
It sounds like it has a community feel about it, and community is at the heart of what you're looking to do, and therefore there's a huge involvement of the community. How has it evolved and changed since the outset back in 2000 when London held that first conference?
In the 20 years that it has been going, and that we've been working on this, it really has come along. I mean, we always worked with the willing in the beginning, and we worked a lot in, you know, the Western democracies, in the global north, as they say, and people invited us to bring the conference to their towns to move on, and it focused very much around. We wrote the International Charter for Walking so people would understand what was needed. And the conversation was just very much about what are the basics and how do we begin and what do we do. And over time, the depth of research, the number of people doing PhDs, the examples and best practices emerging from the cities, like the body of knowledge has grown substantially over these years. But in the last, when I came on board, we really started to stretch beyond the sort of Western axis that we had, and into Asian countries and into South America to be truly global. And so we expanded the conversation into these regions. And we went to Mexico for a conference, and we've had a conference in Hong Kong. But that exposure to the international community has lifted us up into that global conversation around the sustainable development goals, around global action plans for health and the new urban agenda. And so we felt, after spending a long time encouraging people to walk, we also expanded our focus to look and support people in countries where already the majority of people are walking, but the facilities are terrible. And so this is in a lot of the global south in Africa and countries, some of the countries in Asia. And so we've expanded into developing resources and working with development agencies to reach into these communities and expand the conversation. And now, I mean, the conversation is a cacophony. It's not just a few lone voices. And I think it's always great. Like, I was really inspired, and most people in my arena have been inspired by a few key people. And 15 years into this journey, some young guy said to me the other day, he said, "Oh, do you know so-and-so? He always says this." And I was like, "Yeah, I was there 15 years ago when he said that." And so when you get young people telling you, like, saying these things back, you realize how the message is getting out. And definitely the last 5 years, the level of attention and support and engagement we are getting is really exciting, actually. And it's also really demanding. I mean, thinking about the idea around balance, you know, the invitations to speak, the need to travel, the balance around that with, you know, walking the dog and going to sports night at schools and things, you know, that we've had to review, you know, how we balance out that demand on our time and how we maintain that single list, as I said. And so we felt, we created the organization into a foundation, and that allowed us to have a board of trustees and an advisory council and a range of people who could be associated with us and speak to the agenda with us, and thus expand our sort of sense of who we are and what we can do without becoming a massive organization, but with what we call our Walk 21 family. And so we asked our best friends to come with us on this journey, and luckily they all said yes and joined us.
That's brilliant. So not only are you doing what you love and enjoy, but actually your friends that you associate with and spend time with have also come on board.
Yeah, our professional friends, you know, our colleagues, and you know, we always think of the conference every year as a little bit of a reunion and an opportunity to, you know, catch up and to share and get that sort of, yeah, that energy that you get from being with like-minded people.
How much work goes into hosting and delivering the 3-day event each year?
Yeah, more than you want, of course. we have a local team, and we know how much work it is, but I think they always start out not realizing just what's involved. But it is, it's a 2-year to 18-month process to make the conference happen. And we work very closely with the local host, and juggling the sort of the dimensions of the program and the local the venues and sponsorships and all those sorts of things. So yeah, it's a big factor. I mean, it's probably, I mean, I don't know, actually, we should probably do a percentage of our time that we would spend on the conference, but Jim and I, we take turns at who's sort of the lead contact for the conference each year because of whoever set it up or whatever the other workload is and things. So we manage an overriding, you know, sort of coordination and collaboration role, but the sort of nitty gritty day to day stuff is done by our local host. And this year it's the city of Rotterdam.
Yeah. Well, that leads me nicely onto Rotterdam, because I wanted to ask you about that. So your next conference takes place in October in Rotterdam.
Yeah.
What are you personally excited about with the next conference coming up?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually, because I worried once I started working in this that I would suddenly not want to go to the conference anymore. But because the conversation keeps growing and expanding, and I thought, well, what do you go to a conference for? You go for inspiration and you go for new information. And if I still feel inspired and I learn something new, it doesn't have to be everything, but it just has to be something. And it happens every year, particularly with Rotterdam. We're back in Europe for the first time in 4 years. Now, we used to be in Europe every other year, but because of this shift in our focus, we've been further away. And so I'm really excited about coming back to Europe and looking at all the things that are happening in this region of the world, and the developments that have happened in that time and the commitment and the focus on walking. And Rotterdam, it's a lovely city. It's an interesting city because it's what they call a second city, like Manchester is in the UK. These are cities that have had less attention than the capitals. You know, they're big sort of semi-industrial cities or port cities. And they've really, really, really worked hard over the last few years to create lovely public space and to invest in sustainable transport. The city itself is inspiring, and that's what I'm really excited to explore, how Rotterdam has transformed a less classical European city, because European cities are very classical and very easy to make walkable. But Rotterdam isn't, because it was, you know, sort of so much new build and the scale is different, and yet they're really making an impact, and it's going to be really, so really looking forward to exploring it some more. And this opportunity to be back in Europe and celebrating with, we know we're very connected to Europe. We've worked here for a very long time. And again, it is a bit like a family reunion. And to see the changes here will be really exciting.
It sounds like it's going to be a great 3 days in Rotterdam. Where do you see the future impact of Walk 21? And are you able to share any insight or plans for the future?
Well, again, it sounds a bit cheesy, but Walk 21. So we're celebrating 20 years this year, and that's a significant milestone, and we'll mark that in Rotterdam. But actually, we're planning a bigger party next year for our 21st. We figured that when Walk 21 turns 21, that's an occasion, and we're going to be hosted by Mayor Park from the city of Seoul in South Korea, which has done some fantastic iconic projects for walking. And that's going to be a very big celebration. And we've got a lot of plans around capturing the status of walking globally and in the cities that have been involved in Walk 21 all these years. And we're going to continue to push into the global south and into supporting cities that are currently still valuing motorized travel as their ambition, as they, you know, sort of lift themselves out of poverty, and to try and put a greater value on walking in those areas, and to try and leapfrog some of the mistakes that we've made in the north and the west, and create some better cities for people. And I think that the thing that for me with it is we often work with people for a few years, they're on the walking agenda, and then they move on to a new job or a new something else. Whereas for us, we just sit still and it keeps evolving and changing around us, and we keep pushing and shaping it to be what we want it to be. So we've got a few years left that we have to work. We've still got kids in school and university, and you know, we're young enough to still have a fair amount of time left to give. And we just want to see the strengthening of walking and the valuing of walking in our communities, and we'll continue to work where and how that, you know, that can be to most effect, really, to best effect. We're not into growing a big organization, we just want to have a big impact.
I love the fact that you're clear on your niche and you remain firm with what your niche is and what you're all about. And you know, it's easy to get distracted by the noise or the latest trend or the latest fad. And clearly in your 20th year, you know, you're still doing well and still able to, you know, get your message out there and make an impact across the world where lots of other people are, you know, falling by the wayside or losing whatever their focus is. Do you see other people coming into this space and making more noise or adding to what you've created, or where do you see walking as a whole as we enter into, you know, 2020 and beyond?
Yeah, it's very good timing you asked me this question, actually, because I have spent the last 3 weeks traveling, luckily just within Europe, no long haul. I've been to the public transport conference 1 week. I went to a sustainable mobility planning conference the next week, and I was at a cycling conference last week in Dublin, and all of them are talking about the future of mobility, the future of our cities. And two of the panels I sat on at the was all about, you know, what is the future? Are we going to be flying? Are we going to be all on little micro scooters? Are we going to be in hovercrafts? You know, like this sort of, and the reality is that we're still going to be walking. You know, the nitty gritty of all this technology and all these opportunities flies around, and we all get very attracted to it, and there's lots of good things that can be realized from it. But at the end of the day, we are still putting one foot in front of the other and going places. And so we have to keep our feet on the ground. We can have our heads in the clouds with all of that, but we have to keep our feet on the ground and recognize that when we walk out our front doors, even if we then get onto a different mode or a different thing or go a different way, then we are still going to be walking, and it's a very cheap investment. And so I see actually here in the UK, one of the signals that people are really picking up on this and committing to it. Again, I will cite Manchester, but London's done the same thing, is walking and cycling commissioners to bring that political profile to the agenda. And Chris Boardman is now that in Manchester, but other cities that have done this across Europe, where they have nominated walking commissioners who sort of bridge the gap between the public profile, the politician, and the public service, and they're really committing and planning and investing in walking. And I don't mean just in footpaths on the side of the road. I mean, it can be recreational and parks and those types of walking as well. But it is, you do see these cities emerging that their best investment is in active travel, as we call it here. And cities like Manchester are really doing that right now. Glasgow is another great example. So I don't feel alone. Very much feel it's, you know, in some ways it's feeling very busy up here in the walking agenda, and we are growing our network, and we have a group of academics that are part of our loop, and we have advocates, and we have some key politicians or retired politicians who support us to think about this, and the available voices for the conversation. You know, we might have had a few solo singers back in the year 2000, but we have a very big choir now.
I love that analogy. And it's so timely because, you know, as we read and we hear a lot about, you know, well-being and health and wellness and, you know, all the statistics that come out that are presented to us that show us that we're not as fit or as healthy as we have been previously, walking is or should be one of those things that is accessible to most, if not all, and the first port of call, because not everybody, you know, wants to go out and run or invest in a bicycle, but yeah, they can get out in a large proportion and walk, which is great because it helps from a physical but also a mental perspective.
Yeah, actually, can I pick you up on that? Because that's so important. The mental health benefits of walking, walking in green space have been well measured now. The evidence is totally in on that. And the value, if you've got a tense situation and don't, you know, and you could go for a walk with a colleague, or you could go for a walk with a family member, so that you're in motion. You're already making yourself feel better, even while you're dealing with a difficult discussion. Walking can help that very much, and it's that, as you say, the accessibility of it. But it's so low key, but it's so high value. That's what keeps us keeping on.
I love it. Now, Bronwyn, I have what I call some 60-second quick-fire questions, which I ask of each guest towards the end of the interview. And this is really to give a slightly different insight into each of my guests. So are you ready to answer some quick-fire questions?
I hope so.
Brilliant. Right, the first one then. Who or what inspires you the most?
It's such a hard question that I could never come up with a single answer, but I've used this word cheesy quite a bit, but I must admit my husband inspires me in extraordinary ways. And that's a lovely thing to be able to say, but because we share a professional and a personal space, I always admire how he works In that professional arena as well as in our personal life. And he's always brought a different perspective to how I think or how I do things that I guess is part of the value that we find together. But perhaps a bit more broadly than that, I'm just inspired, you know, by people who with energy who believe in something and get up and want to make the world a better place every day. And I work with a lot of these people, and it's people who want to have an impact beyond their personal, that beyond themselves. So they want to make the world a better place, and that's what inspires me.
Yeah, two great examples, and Jim sounds like a wonderful human being.
So well, I think so.
Yeah, well, just listening to you describe him a couple of times and share a little bit of insight today. There's doubt in my mind. Bronwyn, three guests to have to dinner, past or present?
Yeah, this is, I love this question. And, you know, I always start with Annie Lennox, the singer.
Okay. Yeah.
And in fact, I just had this conversation about her the other day when she walked past in front of me in London. And I was literally, she walked straight across in front of me. And I was that close to saying, I just wanted to invite you to dinner. I was so close to actually acting on it because I just literally talked about it. But she's fantastic. I actually also just recently, a Prime Minister from Australia, Bob Hawke, who was a Prime Minister from the early 80s, and would love to have dinner with him because he's somebody who believed that we could all make, that working together, we could make the world a better place. He was a collaborative, collegiate politician that just brought in a new era for Australia, which said we can have a successful economy, we can create wealth, and we can work with the trade unions, and we can share that, and we can all go forward together. And in these fraught political times, which I just find shockingly, you know, worryingly, I feel he just captured the importance of finding our shared interests and that sense of working together, which is we need very much. And then my third person is... it's a bit in the line of Annie Lennox, but I decided that I would choose, I feel a bit shy now about saying this, but I really admire someone like Bette Midler, and I like her characters that she's played in films as well as her person. I follow her on Twitter, and she's hilarious and clever, and she does really good things in New York about green space, which turned out to be an extra bonus because I loved her in the movie The Rose when I was a child. And I always loved women like Liza Minnelli in Cabaret. And yeah, when she played her character in Cabaret and she had green nail polish and, you know, she was bold and exciting. And that type of woman, which I think is Bette Midler, not just in character, but in life. And I think it would be fantastic to share a meal with her.
What a wonderful dinner that would be. And Jim doesn't even get an invite. You might have chosen Jim. I'll let you break the news to him. Okay, a guilty pleasure, should you view it that way, which you do when you have some time to yourself.
Yeah, I'm glad you said guilty if you view it that way, because I really feel that guilt is a wasted emotion. We really must focus, you know, like we can spend too long feeling guilty. It's like when women go to eat cake and say, oh, I really mustn't. I'm like, just eat it. Just either eat it or don't eat it. But just, you know, like, and I must admit, if the thing for me is actually literally to do nothing, to just lie still in the sun and do nothing, because I've got so much I want to get done. Like one of my boys said one year, he said, what do you do when you're bored? I'm like, there's no bored. I would love that. That would be guilty if I suddenly felt bored, but just that opportunity to sit still. And I don't mean doing gardening. I don't mean reading a book. I don't mean walking the dog. I mean, literally just doing nothing.
I love that. One of my previous guests said do nothing as well. And that really struck a chord, because I can't remember the last time I got bored or heard somebody say, I'm bored. We seem to have moved on considerably since then. Okay, a book or a podcast that you would recommend?
Okay, you'll see some consistency here with my dinner party guests. But the person in my, the podcast in my head is, there's a podcast done by an Australian who lives in the UK called Deborah Frances White, and it's called The Guilty Feminist. Uh-huh. And it is, it's hilarious. It's absolutely laugh out loud hilarious. And she has a whole bunch of guests that come on her show. And the whole point of the show is that we're striving to be better, to be good, to be feminist and to do good in the world. But we all have our failings and our imperfections, but we must continue to aim for better. And so The Guilty Feminist always starts with, I'm a feminist, but... And then you say, this week I, you know, you did something that's not so much a feminist sort of approach to life. And I and she brings a lot of diversity. She gives a space for lots of different voices in our community. She lifts people up. She gives causes and ideas and opportunities a space in the arena. And she's been a massive, massive success. She's in lots of different spaces now, but this podcast is where she started. And I absolutely love it. It's laugh out loud funny. It's inclusive. It's recognizing that we're not perfect, but we just keep trying to do the right thing and to do better each day, or to take some responsibility for who we are and what we do.
I love the idea of that. I will check that out. Thank you very much.
No
What's
worries.
Your one tip for improving overall well-being?
Well, this is going to sound like a cliche, but let's go for a walk.
I would
really,
have been
honestly, could I have said anything else?
No. not at all.
The only thing I would add to that, because actually going for a walk almost anywhere will be good for you. But if you can go for a walk in green space, whether it's countryside or whether it's city streets or parks or whatever, it's going to help. And it doesn't even have to be very long, but just a little bit every day will make you feel better.
Absolutely. 100% agree. Bronwyn, I have three final questions for
you. Okay.
Who would you recommend as a future guest on the show?
Yeah, it's tricky that. You know, because I work in, you know, I have what I call a community, a professional community. And it's women like me who have family life and, you know, global jobs. And we meet up in, you know, various points around the world at different times and, you know, share our experiences and the challenges and things of around this sort of issue about, you know, sort of work and life and things. And so I'd like to imagine that you could talk to, you know, someone else like me who's doing it differently or juggling it. But I'm not actually sure I could name them right now in terms of putting their name into the public arena.
That's
I'd
okay.
have to ask them first. Yeah.
That's okay.
Or maybe you should interview Jim and find out if what I've said resonates and we've got that balance working after all.
I think it would be great to get Jim on the show on a future episode if he is up for that and get his views as well. That would be perfect.
Yeah, okay. I'll have to ask.
I'll let you do that. How can the listeners find out more about you and Walk 21?
Well, we have the usual website, walk21.com, where I'm on Twitter personally as well as Walk 21. We have a Facebook page, but I'm not very good at the Facebook page, so I'm not quite sure what that's about, what that's up to. And LinkedIn, we're there, you know, and they're our sort of main. Twitter is my favorite place for interacting. I know there's lots of downsides of Twitter, but that's my social media, and LinkedIn. People are very welcome to find us there. And if anyone is inspired about the walking agenda, then, you know, think about coming to Rotterdam and meet us in person, because it's really, we have artists coming as well as all these techie data people and, you know, politicians and everybody. It really, yeah, restores your soul to keep on going.
Fabulous. I will include all of those details in the show notes.
Good.
What's your final takeaway for the listeners?
It's interesting because I think, when we first talked about this, and I love the fact that your show is called Perfect Imbalance, because one of our boys is a circus performer. So he literally does balancing as his job. He walks a slack line and he carries people on his shoulders and he juggles and things. And so he is literally balancing all the time. And I think if you can find what is your passion, as he did and as we have, then the balancing is much easier. If what you're doing, if you can't find your balance, then you've got to find the thing that's putting it out, that you feel is the chore or the burden or the thing that brings you down, which means that the other things are not lifting you up as high. And it doesn't mean that you have to find, it doesn't mean that it has to be a high, amazing job or anything like that, but just find the thing that makes you happy or makes you, that you're committed to. I really believe that you've got to find the thing where you can make a contribution to the world. It's all the research shows that if we volunteer to our services, if we help other people, if we give to others or do something for other people, then we feel better about ourselves. And one of the best ways you can actually get children to feel more confident about themselves is ask them to teach a younger child the skills that they have, because then they recognize, oh, I've got these skills, I'm passing them on and I'm sharing them. But giving to others is a really lovely way to feel better about yourself. And so my sort of philosophy in life is I wake up on the side of good every day. It's not about being perfect. It's not about doing the recycling correctly or anything like that. That's why I love the Guilty Feminist. But just always realize that you can do something that makes the world a better place and makes you feel better and keeps that motivation and that spirit going forwards. Sorry, that got a bit wordy, but it just really matters to me, that thing about just do the right thing. Think about what the opportunity to give to others and to keep that sense of community and return, which makes you feel better as a person. I really believe that it can't be all about self.
What a beautiful final takeaway for the listeners. And I get exactly what you're talking about there. And if people did a little bit more of what you described there, or considered others a little bit more, then the world would be a very different place. And we can all start with something small and then just see what happens with it. But if we hold that thought in mind and we wake up on the side of good, which I love as well, then we're setting our intention for the day. Bronwyn, it's been an absolute pleasure to be able to spend a little bit of time with you today. Thank you so much indeed for agreeing to come on the show and providing so much insight. Thank you very much indeed.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you as well. Thank you. Goodbye.
Now, if you enjoyed the episode with Bronwyn and can't wait to find out more about her or Walk 21, please do check out the show notes for details of Bronwyn's Twitter and also LinkedIn details. You'll find a link to the Walk 21 Facebook page. And you'll also find details of the Walk 21 website. Alternatively, you can find out more about Bronwyn by reading the latest Ignite blog, Leading the Walking Movement. If you've enjoyed the episode, please do leave the show a rating and a review on iTunes. It will help us reach more listeners in the future. So thank you very much for that. Tune in next time to hear my interview with Nina Grunfeld, founder and creator of Life Clubs. Nina's also a successful entrepreneur, public speaker, and author of 15 books, including The Big Book of Me, Become Your Own Life Coach. Until then, remember this: when you have a balance, enjoy it. When you've got an imbalance, embrace it. For in those moments, we're striving towards achieving our next success, increasing our happiness, or looking for greater fulfillment. Bye for now.